Thank you. Thank you, Shalab, for the introduction. Thank you for being here. You know, the last day, the last conference, but I promise you, I'm going to tell you a lot of things. I'm going to make you think. And when you walk out of here, you're going to see a lot of these concepts and how this is changing. So there are two major areas in COPD that are changing today. One is, when should we use ICS? And who are the patients more likely to benefit from ICS? And my last talk is going to talk about triple therapy, double therapy, combination, and the fixed bronchodilators. So let's get started here. There is no change in my conflict of interest. I would like to address these issues. What's the inflammation in COPD? The indications today from the ICS lab, and I will emphasize that in the U.S., ICS are not approved to be used alone, are approved to be used in combination with LABA. What is this issue about the overlap syndrome? What else do the steroids may do? And finally, we need to address some issues of side effects. So some of the concepts that are changing is the fact that the person who smokes, there is no correlation between pack years and severity of the disease. And we learned this out of the COPD gene, that there are 10,000 smokers, and if you put on the horizontal axis severity of disease and the vertical axis pack year history, it's not an exponential line, it's a horizontal line. I had a friend that he smokes until he was 99 years of age. He died of 103 years after he fell dancing, and he buried three wives of all age. He got mild disease. He was here, but he got 100 pack years history. So that makes that the inflammatory process that was going on and precipitated to the lung is not only the injury or the precipitating factor, it's what the genetics do. And as a matter of fact, what we know now is that independent of the severity of the COPD, you can have, this is the old stage 0 to 4, it doesn't matter how severe is the disease. Inflammation and changes on inflammation are present there. So the first message is, this is not asthma. This is a different inflammatory pattern that is persistent and independent of severity of disease. And second, the most common precipitating factor is cigarette smoking. Everybody who smokes develops some form of lung disease. 20% of people who smoke develop interstitial lung disease, and there is no correlation between smoking and risk factor for severity of the disease. So how do we use asthma today? In the GOLD initiative, we suggest to use asthma in patients who have less than 50% FEV1 or more than 2 exacerbations. ICS LABAs as recommended in these groups because these are the groups that we have shown before that will benefit the most. As a matter of fact, you can choose the formulation with Esonide formoterol, they do better. If you give it together, lung function over time, you can use fluticasone salmeterol, they do better, they improve lung function. But they do more. These medications were the first one to were given then to the purpose to decrease exacerbations. And we know that ICS LABAs do significantly decrease exacerbations compared with fluticasone alone, salmeterol, everything is better than placebo. So we're giving the ICS LABAs not only in the sense of we want to improve lung function, we want to reduce exacerbations, and that's why we, in the GOLD initiative, we put it in the group C and D, the ones who are having exacerbations. And if you look at meta-analysis and systematic reviews, they all consistently show an improvement in the reduction in exacerbations. And in a lot of patients, especially in the group D, we give them in combination with LAMAs. So if you combine ICS LABAs plus LAMA, you get a further reduction in exacerbation that use the LAMA alone. So what we do in our practice, very severe patients, triple therapy, do impact exacerbations. Patients more moderate or with exacerbations, you are reducing exacerbations with ICS. And that's today the recommendation. So what happened in airway reactivity and COPD? In the UPLIFT study, The patients receive 4 doses of ipratropium and 4 doses of salbutamol together. These were patients who had no acute bronchodilator response. And if you look at this graph, 72% of the cohort, all these, had more than 10% improvement of FEV1. We know that in COPD, there is airway reactivity. But the airway reactivity response is not like asthma. There is a very different response. If you look at this publication by Dr. Calvary, you have here a cohort. These people had an acute response. This patient did not have a response on visit number one. 58% responded. But if you go and examine the same patients, you have them come back to the lab a month later, for example. Some of these patients did respond, some of these patients did not respond. And the same here. As a matter of fact, in visit number one, 62% of the patients now responded. And in visit number two, 59. So these, they have. So what's the message? The message is acute bronchodilator response doesn't mean anything in a COPD. If the patient responds, fine. If the patient doesn't respond, it doesn't mean that they will have airway reactivity. That's why we don't, in the GOLD initiative, we don't recommend to do acute bronchodilator response. And as a matter of fact, what we recommend is get the salbutamol and the ipratropium and just test after that. Don't do an acute response. Having said that, there are going to be a group of patients that will fall someplace around here. They're going to be more towards your left, that they will have more reactivity. And this is the group of patients that we are now understanding that we call the COPD asthma or the overlap syndrome. Next month, the GINA publication has a chapter on the asthma overlap. And the challenge that we have is as follows. If you have a 25-year-old who has a lot of atopia, you know, you call it asthma. And you have a 65-year-old that happened to smoke, you call it COPD. But what do you do with a person who had a history of atopia, a history of airway reactivity, and happened to smoke, and is 48 years of age? So that's going to be the individual who's going to fall in this asthma COPD overlap. Very strong family history, a lot of airway reactivity that will increase the risk. And can be smokers or non-smokers. We know in these patients there is a difference in the rate of decline in lung function and in the COPD gene. We were able to identify this cohort of patients, and these patients do develop exacerbations, and this patient has actually more COPD asthma related exacerbations and more severe these exacerbations. So this is not only that there is a different syndrome, there is a different group of patients. This is a population that they do have airway reactivity, and very likely the lung function is going to be 70%, and they are not having exacerbations, so they will not fit in the current recommendations on when to use steroids. And what's going to happen is that currently we are using steroids in patients with FEV1 less than 50% or exacerbations. And that's fine. We'll continue to use in that group. But we are beginning to use steroids, and steroids are indicated in this asthma COPD overlap. In these patients that will have lung function that is more preserved and not having exacerbations, ICS should be part of their therapy. So one of the challenges that we have, and we are learning of these medications, is they may do more than they are intended to do, both good and bad. So let's talk about the good things that we are learning and we are trying to understand about COPD. And especially steroids. We know now that inhaled steroids may impact your decline in lung function, and we saw that in the TORCH study. In the TORCH study, if you look at the patients who were in salmeterol, fluticasone salmeterol compared with the mono components, they have less decline compared with the placebo. The slope of decline was different, and this is probably related to the combination and having less exacerbations are also going to have less decline in lung function. So they do improve, or they help to maintain the lung function stable. And you know, in my practice, I had patients who had been combination therapy or triple therapy for 10 years now. And if you look at the respirometry improved to a certain level 10 years ago, and the FEV1 is a flat line. It has remained totally stable. So this is what we see in clinical trials. You see it in practice. I see it in my patients with severe disease. We also know that, you know, these medications are evolving. We have the new formulation, the fluticasone fumarate, that is a once a day, and this was approved in the United States. It's called Breo. It's combined with vilanterol. And this graph shows you here that they are truly a 24-hour medication that needs to be given once a day, and they do improve lung function. And as a matter of fact, in the registration trials, these patients had FEV1 that are 60% or less, as compared with the LABA, they are adding the ICS is associated with significant reduction in exacerbations. So the new formulations that we're going to see are doing and maintaining that effect. Having a long-term study like TORCH, that we have 3 years, so we have several thousand patients, give us a better understanding of what's going on in the disease. And one important question is, why patients with COPD die? And in TORCH, we can appreciate that a significant number of patients die of cardiac diseases. The respiratory disease or the respiratory cause is actually a minority of the main cause of death. In this study, all the causes of death were reviewed by an adjudication committee that tried to identify, you know, why did patients die. They also were able to identify, if you look at the patients who had a prior cardiovascular disease, if they were on ICS, this is either the fluticasone with salmeterol or fluticasone alone, these patients were less likely of dying of a cardiac event. So suggesting that given the ICS, you know, it may improve lung function, it may decrease, it does decrease exacerbations and may impact the rate of declining lung function. In patients who have history of cardiovascular disease, they may have less cardiac-related events. So it may have some cardioprotection effect that we don't fully understand and where people are working and we're trying to understand now. For example, we know if you measure the arterial stiffness, and this is by aortic pulse wave velocity done in the carotids, if you get a cohort of patients with COPD, these patients, when you give the ICS LABAs, so they use a fixed combination, the stiffness is reduced compared with the cohort that they not receive the medications, suggesting that there is some effect at the inflammatory systemically that may impact cardiovascular disease. To test this hypothesis, today we have a very large study going on called Summit. I'm not sure if anybody from here in Lebanon has participated. These are patients with FEV1s between 50 and 70%. These patients have to have, if they are less than 60 years, a cardiac event, an acute MI or an arrhythmia. If they are more than 60 years, risk factors for cardiovascular disease. They have been randomized to receive the fluticasone fumarate plus vilanterol, vilanterol alone, 3-to-1 placebo, patient with moderate disease. And the objective of this study is to demonstrate that using inhaled steroids may decrease cardiovascular events. You may want to get into the clinicaltrials.gov, and you will be able to see the protocol design. And I think this is going to be huge, because we may not be given, this study is positive, we're not be given and the steroids because they improve exacerbations or improve lung function. It will decrease the most common cause of death in patients with COPD, that is cardiovascular events. So there are extra benefits that were beyond what is happening in the lungs. Let's address another issue. Does ICS puts an increased risk for pneumonia? My opinion is yes. And my group have been working on that for the last 5 years, and we have close to 7 publications. And let me show you just very fast why I say, yes, there is a risk, and I will tell you what I tell my patients. So you have the general population risk for pneumonia is 1 to 9 per 1,000 years. The patient with COPD is 10-fold to 20-fold higher, that risk. So having COPD puts you at a higher risk to develop pneumonia, and our group has published that if you develop pneumonia, you have COPD versus not having COPD, your outcome is different, and your outcome is worse. When we had the TORCH study, in the TORCH study was clearly, this is the probability of developing pneumonia, placebo, salmeterol, fluticasone groups are up here. The separation occurs around 2 years, and the lines continue to separate over time. I don't think we need to fool ourselves and argue how was pneumonia diagnosed. No X-ray. Yes, X-ray. Don't look at that. Because we had 2 publications that patients did have a chest X-ray, and the group who received ICS did have radiologically confirmed increased cases of pneumonia. And in the new preparations with fluticasone fumarate, there were more cases of pneumonia. So why using inhaled steroids may put you at increased risk of pneumonia? And may have to be for the changes in the airway that occurs. All these studies demonstrate the increased risk of pneumonia. These studies are not powered to demonstrate a difference. So all this data suggests, yes, there is an increased risk. So what's happening there? If your patient has COPD and you have an inhaled steroid that develop pneumonia, that pneumonia is actually milder. They're less likely to have a pleural effusion. The group from Anthony Torres in Barcelona published this paper to demonstrate if they have effusions, the effusions are less inflammatory and they are less likely to be empyemas. So did they develop the event? That event is milder. We have shown in 2 papers that the patients who were on ICS versus no ICS have less mortality if they develop pneumonia. This is 1 paper. This is the other paper. So it may turn out to be that this is a 2-sided coin. In one side, the patients are at an increased risk. In the United States, every time patients watch a TV commercial for Seretide or Symbicort, at the end of the commercial says, this medication may increase your risk of pneumonia. So my patients came to me. So listen, you are giving me this, I'm going to have more pneumonia. And I say, yes, you are at an increased risk of pneumonia. But the piece that we don't know is how much the measures that we know from protection from pneumonia protects the patients. In all these studies, we don't have information on vaccination. So I tell my patients, you may be an increased risk for pneumonia, but I'm sure that you get your influenza vaccine every year. I'm sure that you get your pneumococcal vaccine every 5 years, and now the new formulation that probably is more effective. I want you to be protected. If you have symptoms, call me. I want to see you. I want to get a chest X-ray. I'm going to try to treat you and identify your condition. In the other hand, if they are at increased risk, if they develop pneumonia, they're going to have the probability to have a better survival. And the survival is not 30 days of hospital discharge. The protection goes all the way out to 3 months. And we know now that community-acquired pneumonia in the patient who is over the age of 65, the mortality doesn't finish. The risk of mortality doesn't finish when the patient leaves the hospital. These patients are at an increased risk for mortality for the next 3 to 5 years. So it seems to be on inhaled steroids protects them. See how it separates? And inhaled steroid actually stays in the upper part. So there is a risk, but at the same time, there is a protection. So I believe that the current recommendations of the global initiative in patients with group C and D who have decreased lung function as well as having exacerbations. Given inhaled steroids are going to protect them for reduction in exacerbations, may have a cardiovascular protection. We have this other group of patients that is independent of severity of lung function that will benefit from inhaled steroids too. So the conclusions is, as COPD, the inflammatory burden and the inflammatory process that occurs in the airway presents regardless of severity of the disease. This inflammatory process goes beyond the lungs and may have a very significant impact in the cardiovascular system. And just to remind you that cardiovascular is the most common comorbidity associated with a chronic lung disease. There is a significant group of patients who have, reversibility. There is these patients who have asthma, COPD, both diseases. So we need to, in our, the publication you're going to see in the GINA document, we don't tell you about anything about biomarkers. Forget about biomarkers now. I tell you forget about biomarkers because there is a huge initiative about biomarkers. There is a biomarkers consortium. All the pharmaceutical companies, all the cohorts that are around, and there's like 20 different places in Europe and Japan as well as the US, they all have put the blood samples together and they are working to try to identify what are those biomarkers. My prognosis is that in a couple of years, the same thing that we do for liver tests, that you are right, liver tests, and you get 3-4 different tests to give you an idea what's going on, we may gonna have a COPD test. And over there are going to be different blood markers that will tell you risk for exacerbations as well as short-term and long-term prognosis. So in this document, we go clinically 100%, and we're telling you, look at these patients who have atopy, happen to smoke, and they are in their 40s. These are asthma COPD overlap. The fixed combinations are having a significant impact on the disease, have decreased exacerbations and improving lung function. There are side effects that we know. We know about osteoporosis, we know about diabetes, we know about skin abnormalities. COPD is another of these, pneumonia is another of these side effects that you should be aware, our patients should be aware of that. We should be looking for it. And at the same time, institute all the measures that you can to prevent these events to happen. Thank you. And I'm not sure the Google Translator was correct. I don't know if it says thank you there, but that's what the Google Translator told me. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Answer.